superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
His mouth is his main musical instrument, and his lyrics are hilarious.
Put down your phone, you stupid idiot, and concentrate.
We'll catch up with Heatbox. But first... You know that song, but have you heard it this way?
I'll be taking care of business every day, taking care of business.
That's a cover of the Randy Bachman hit by Anne Mary of Louisville, Kentucky. But you don't have to go that far to find women taking care of business.
When we put a bunch of people together in a room, especially women, we're going to have all kinds of different ideas and ways that we can try and tackle some of the problems.
Taking care of business, working overtime.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The Superior Business Improvement District has a goal of making its target area a desired destination to conduct business, shop, dine, and fine entertainment. But they don't expect entrepreneurs to do it all on their own, and they offer advice and programs to help them achieve it. Women-owned businesses have been especially underrepresented, and Kelly Peterson, the executive director of the Business Improvement District, or BID, recently launched a program to combat those impediments, and where she thought she might get 10 women to sign up, 30 of them showed, including Natalie Harris of Superior Waffles. And they both join me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Kelly and Natalie.
Thank you.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having us.
So, Kelly, am I right about those numbers, which are courtesy of our friend Maria Lockwood from the Superior Telegram? And did you have a seat for all 30?
Yeah, we sure did. We always bring more chairs to whatever table, so people are always included and welcome. So, yeah, we had over 30 people register. I think it was like 36.
All right. And am I right about the impetus for the program, or is it a stereotype that women need more encouragement than men in business?
No, I think it was one of the things that was most intriguing to me in the new position, going around and meeting a lot of the business owners, talking with them about what kind of needs they had and how things were going. I began in August of 22, so pandemic was kind of winding down, and we had a lot of new businesses open during that time. Superior Waffles was one of them during the pandemic. And it seemed like there was a lack of opportunities, obviously. And I think especially women, you know, we're caregivers at home and with our families. And I think that was a big barrier. Not only were the opportunities limited, but it was very difficult for people to give up their free time, what little free time they had. It was just something that people weren't doing, is reaching out to others.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, Kelly just stole my thunder because I was going to reveal your secret identity as the co-proprietor of Superior Waffles, and now everybody knows who you are. So. So your operation is doing great, started during the pandemic, as Kelly just said. What are you looking for in the group?
Well, being a small business owner, it can be challenging for men and women. And just having this group of women who are dealing with the same things, like issues and, you know, everything. Just having that group coming together and bouncing ideas off each other and being like, hey, do you know someone who can help me with this? And they can be like, oh, yeah, here's the name and number. And it was just really, really refreshing and encouraging.
Mm-hmm. One hallmark of your program, I'm sure, and of business profiles that we've done in the past, is that many startups find they have to retool or shift gears a year or so after starting up, certainly the first 3 years. Natalie, we had your neighbor Twisted Pastries on, and they told us that they initially thought their pastries would be their big seller, and it turned out to be their coffee. But you do waffles, and you did waffles, and you're all about waffles. Is there any reason for you to change and add pancakes?
No, absolutely not. Waffles, I saw this quote that said, waffles are just more considerate than pancakes. They have little cups that hold the syrup. Like, here, let me hold the toppings for you. And so waffles to me are just way better. And we will not be switching to pancakes.
Right. But there must be some things that you you did do some changes in plan, or maybe an expansion, a second store in the works, perhaps, or franchising.
Yeah, we are looking at expanding. We've been open almost 3 years, and it has been a blast, and people come from all over. We have a Where Are You From map at our restaurant, and there is hundreds and hundreds of pins from all over, not only the U.S., but all over the world. And so it's definitely a unique niche, waffles. And so, yes, we are exploring, expanding, and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, Kelly, you could comment on that, that this is the exception to the rule where Cal and Natalie, Cal Harris, Natalie's husband, just lucky, or were they just really, really, really smart? I think they're both smart in knowing exactly what to do and what to deliver, and they delivered it.
Yeah, no, you stole my thunder, Robin. They are very smart. I think they've done some really great things with their marketing, and Natalie has a great background in marketing, and I think they've done some really great things, like some of the waffles on the road, pairing up with other businesses and having waffles served at different events, I think is one of those cool expansion things. And the keto waffles, what do you call those, Natalie?
Chaffles?
Did you start out with those? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that burst my bubble there, but having some of the, especially the on the road features, I think have been really cool. And I think they were lucky. I think nobody has a focus as succinct as just the waffles, just the one offering. They do have great coffee, but they do things right in their store. They made it good and continue to perform at really high end. So I think that's a real testament to the quality of the products and the uniqueness of what they have. That's something obviously that people really want to be a part of.
And again, that is not the usual case. So what are you finding with the other program participants? And I don't know, maybe are you using Natalie and Cal as examples of, you know, you really can plan and study and research, and sometimes you do end up doing exactly what you thought you were going to do. But what are you encountering on other program participants?
I think they certainly did their homework and found that niche. I think we have some really other great businesses that have expanded. I think about Havana's, and that's over on Broadway. They started as Superior Cubans, which was the food truck, and had an excellent product, great following among people. Anytime they showed up, I know I was there looking for their Cuban sandwiches. And what they did then was expand into the larger space of owning a building and making Havana's a whole restaurant wrapped around that original idea and that concept of the Cuban sandwiches. So I think people have expanded, and they're one of the things that's a struggle is when they are retooling or expanding, that, you know, there are products and services, folks that are available to help them. There are grants that the stakeholders can apply for, and helping with some of those more front-facing investments that they need to do. But the key, I think, too, especially with this group, is really working with one-to-one, getting to know the businesses and the people that are in those decision-making positions, to let them know that there's people that are out there to help them and work with them. We work really closely with the Development Association and Jim Caesar, and the amount of work and finesse that he can work with businesses to help them find their different niches of funding is just imperative to the success of a lot of our businesses. And even with this group, in the Superior Entrepreneurship Center, Tara Gunderson from the Entrepreneur Fund, she's helping with this program. Originally, I started lot more that I wasn't even sure what direction it was going to go, and had asked Kara to jump in. So she's been helping with that. So really we partnered together with the Entrepreneur Fund to put the program together.
We're speaking with Kelly Peterson, Executive Director of the Superior Business Improvement District, and Natalie Harris of Superior Waffles. We're talking about the Business Improvement District's Women in Business program. Natalie, are you more of a participant looking for resources or encouragement or support, or have you become something of a mentor toward the other participants, or both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. We were lucky enough to have the resources and seek out the resources when we were opening, you know, the development centers, Superior Bid, Entrepreneur Fund, and the Small Business Development Center. So we kind of were really blessed in that aspect. So I'm also looking for networking, just other women who are in the same boat as me. But like at our first meeting, you know, people were asking a lot of questions like, how do I do this? And where do I go for that? And it was cool to be like, oh, here's where we went and here's what we did and here's where resources are out there. So yeah, a little bit of both.
And what I hear you saying is that entrepreneurship or whatever you want to call it, network is the key there, right? You don't stop. So even though you, you know, completely, once again, researched all this stuff, figured out, yes, Waffles, and lo and behold, Waffles turned out to be the thing, you haven't stopped networking. Your eyes and ears are open.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's one of the coolest things I think about this job, too, is when I'm out meeting with the business owners and talking with them, realizing that maybe they know the person across the street or right next to them. But they really want to get to know the other person a couple blocks down that owns a business, and trying to have those opportunities for people to be in fellowship together, for lack of a better word. Because at any point in time, we could be the student or the mentor or the person that's there just hyping everybody up. I wanted the group to be pretty informal, especially at the beginning, because I wanted to make sure that they all knew this was their group. What they wanted to come from the group, you know, I would help facilitate. So after that first meeting, some of the things they talked about were internships. How do you get an intern? How do you, you know, what other kind of funding or grants are available? So for the next meeting, then, I brought in Ilsa Heshorn from UWS. She's the director of the Link Center, which has the internship program. So she came and presented. And then I had Tara Gunderson, again, who is now with the Entrepreneur Fund, is partnering with the BID and hosting this. You know, she helped put together just some really key points of contact for people to reach out to. And then since then, we've had even more collaborating, talking about different things that are going on with the BID, or we had a discussion following up with the Superior Days. And then we also had Senior Connections come and talk about dementia-friendly businesses and what that training is like and how people can take part in that.
When you were speaking of internships, you were talking about the businesses acquiring an intern, not people signing up for them.
Correct. Looking at either finding an intern, or university is always looking for businesses that they can partner with in internships. You know, they have a number of students every year that need some kind of internship program, and that's something that, you know, it can go both ways with that group.
Natalie, what's been particularly inspiring point of just this whole connection and the networking that you're doing here?
Well, just collaborating and being able to be honest and vulnerable with each other, like, hey, I'm having a hard time and this is really hard. Is anyone else, you know, struggling? And then I had another business owner say afterwards, hey, I totally feel you. We're right down the street. If you ever need anything, come on over, give me a call. Even if you just need a hug, it's just really encouraging to have that.
A hard time. You guys are doing gangbusters. The only hard time you were having the last time I talked to you was you're running out of batter.
Yeah.
Is that still a problem?
We actually did run out last weekend. So last weekend was really, really busy. So.
Okay. And now I know that the cure for that is a hug.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that Calvin's in charge of ordering the batter. So there. I don't know if this is a tough question or not. I'm not going to preface it. But, you know, there's all kinds of noise about DEI these days, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And a lot of what DEI is just a new name. Actually, I've traced it. I did a little search on when it first appeared for equal opportunity programs and affirmative action at one point or whatever. If you go back to the Civil Rights Act, the largest beneficiaries of the act actually turned out to be women. And so has anyone brought up a DEI question? How do you have a woman-only thing? Can you do that or something like that?
I had one comment so far, and, you know, I'm more than welcome to have anybody come and join the group, you know, if they find a comfortable place there, that's fine. But the other part is exactly what you're talking about, is that going back and, you know, it's important to have a level playing field. You know, we can talk about the bigger issues. We still don't have equal pay for equal jobs. There's many things, and I won't go down a political path, but just looking at jobs and employment and opportunities for people, you know, women by nature are more typically, and this was a big part of this group for me, was being a wife, a daughter, a mother, a good friend, an aunt, all these different relationships. Women are primarily the, and not the only one, so, but women are primarily the caregivers in their social, emotional groups that they're in, if it's family or friendship groups, whatever. And we're so busy nurturing other people, we forget to do it for ourselves. And we forget to make time for the important things. And sometimes the important things are showing up to events and meeting people, going to groups like this and being vulnerable. And I pride myself on being very open and vulnerable. I am not an expert in anything, but I know that when we put a bunch of people together in a room, especially women, we're going to have all kinds of different ideas and ways that we can try and tackle some of the problems that we have. And so I want people to be open, but also to think about, we're just trying to support one another in a safe way and to help people find those opportunities for support that they might not even know that they need.
Natalie, if for some reason somebody doesn't know where Superior Waffles is, tell us where you are, when you're open, and give yourself a commercial.
Sure. Superior Waffles is open Wednesday through Sunday, 8 to 3. We are closed Mondays and Tuesdays. We're at 1412 Tower Avenue. Plenty of free parking. Offer a variety of sweet and savory waffles. So come on down and get a waffle.
All right. And Kelly, you're basically across the street. Tell us where you are and what the bid does and how people can contact you.
Sure. We are at 1401 Tower Avenue. Our main office is on the third floor in the ballroom of the Superior Entrepreneurship Center, which is also formerly known as the old historic post office in Superior. And people can send me an email, and that is Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N-K, at superiorbid.com. We're here for you.
All right. Well, that's good for me. We've been speaking with Kelly Peterson, Executive Director of the Superior Business Improvement District, and Natalie Harris of Superior Waffles. Thank you for joining us, Kelly and Natalie.
Thank you for having me.
Taking care of business everywhere. It's somebody taking care of business and working overtime.
I've been so funky since the day I was born. I've been funky, I've been so dang funky since the day I was born.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Rap music, or beatbox, have been called lots of things, from empowering and realist to overly explicit, but you usually don't hear them referred to as hilarious. That hasn't stopped Twin Cities performer Heatbox, who calls his latest album hilarious and epically legendary. And he's bringing those attributes to the West Theater in Duluth next Thursday, May 9th. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Heatbox.
Hello.
So before we get to your content, you're described as a rapper and a beatboxer as well as a musician. Are all those different things? And explain beatboxing for the uninitiated.
Beatboxing is where you make sounds with your mouth, basically. Anytime you make a sound effect while playing with Legos or while you're in the shower pretending to be Luke Skywalker, you're beatboxing, basically. But it's traditionally like the drum sounds, all the and turntable sounds like a DJ, like, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, like all that kind of stuff.
All right. Those are sounds I haven't made in the shower, but go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a guy that's been for a long time combining beatboxing with looping and singing and writing weird songs.
Okay. Well, as I said, we'll get to the content in a moment. You're definitely singing more than rapping in some of your songs. Dare I say at times you're even crooning?
Yeah, I'm much more of a singer than a rapper, although I do rap sometimes. But yeah, on this latest album, I decided to use any instrument I wanted. On my previous albums, I used only mouth sounds most of the time. But on this one, I said, no rules. We'll just do whatever we want.
So previously, you'd be in the a cappella section, perhaps?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Funky a cappella, I called it.
You know, I've always wondered, I mean, there are groups that specialize in a cappella, and I always wonder, well, wait a minute, is it against the law to bring in a musical instrument or a drum or something?
You know, it's funny. I have a lot of friends in the a cappella world, and people do get, audience members get mad if they bring in any real instruments. Like, it's like when Bob Dylan picked up an electric guitar or something and people got mad that it wasn't an acoustic guitar.
That is interesting. Maybe it is not quite against the law, but there's a moral and ethical law or something like that. All right.
Yeah, I got it.
Well, let's get to the content. By way of introducing one of your pieces, you have one called Beige on your new album, which seems to be a commentary on Minnesota blandness. It's more about that. But obviously, there's humor in here, and you say hilarious, but it's not the Weird Al Yankovic kind of stuff that's, you know, completely guffaw, laugh your head off right there.
I think it's supposed to be something where maybe you didn't even know it was funny at first, but if you listen to it a couple times, it kind of sinks in, and then you can get some of the, you know, lyrical content to sink into your bones a little bit and hopefully get a couple laughs. But the title, Hilarious and Epically Legendary, is like obviously a tongue-in-cheek self-parody overblown title, you know? I mean, who would actually name their album that? But I did.
Right. And thank you. Just like the a cappella police or whatever it was we were just talking about, you reassured me I had the right reaction. That's exactly what it was. I listened to it and I said, well, wait a minute. And listen again. Whereas with Weird Al, you know, his thing is like right in your face and he says something ha-ha funny right there and you get it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Weird Al, by the way. He's one of my favorite artists. I have all the love for that zany, doink, doink, baruga kind of craziness, but right. I wanted to go with something else.
Right. So, well, tell us a bit about Beige, and let's hear this. Am I correct? Is it a commentary on Minnesota blandness?
Yeah, it's just, I'm a musician, so I meet lots and lots of different kinds of people around the world, and I noticed that if you would start to make like six figures, then for some reason you decorated your entire house in beige and brown colors. And like it was the poorer people I knew that had bright, vibrant houses. And I was like, why do these rich people always decorate their entire houses brown? It's so weird. You can do anything you want with all that money. You could do cool rainbow cushions on your couch, but they never do that. I don't know why.
All right. And I will do a spoiler alert, I guess, for anyone looking at the video version of this. It's the first time I saw crisp bread in a video, and I guess it was beige colored. All right. Well, here is Beige by Heatbox. Was Beige by Heatbox. He'll be performing at the West Theater in Duluth next Thursday, May 9th, and also he'll be at the Find Your North Music Festival in Ironwood, Michigan on May 25th. So we were talking about your different genres. What is your musical background and geographic while we're at it?
I'm from the Twin Cities, and when I was growing up, my dad had good taste in music, I think, and he showed me lots of cool stuff, but my main influences are the Beach Boys, Weird Al Yankovic, Rozelle, which is the first time I heard somebody beatbox like professionally, and then James Brown. So if I could be the the squish together of all those characters, that'd be the best.
James Brown meets the Beach Boys. How does that manifest itself?
Yeah, that's kind of where I want to sit with music, is in a funky, danceable thing, but with lots of harmonies of the voice. Those are my kind of favorite things.
All right. Well, let's hear another. How about Clap on the One and Three? And I am familiar with the whole racial thing that Black people mostly clap on the two and four, while white people on the one and three. And we, of course, don't stereotype people. But you want to explain that and tell us your take on it in the song?
No. This is just a funny, silly song, just poking fun at old white ladies who I've noticed clap on the one and three a lot. You know, it's just supposed to be fun. No big deal. No one's gotten mad at me yet.
All right, well, here is Clap on the One and Three by Heatbox.
She likes that old kind of funky soul.
She do.
You just put a little glitter on your speaker when you rock and roll.
Ooh.
I ain't never been a quitter. I acquit her when she stole my soul.
Voodoo.
Said now you got the evidence of why this song was wrote. I never forget I did a double take or two. Came walking in the front door, looking all across the room. Floating up to me, she was so fly that she flew. And then she whispered something to me that has changed my point of view. She said, manholes, they're in the street. Lesbians, vegetarians, they don't eat. Slightly lighter skin on the bottom of their feet. Old white ladies always clap on the one and three. At first I didn't get it, couldn't catch it, and I failed to grasp it. But the second time I heard it, I was seconds from a heart attack. Just throw your hands up if you got a question to ask. Yes, we brought enough candy for everybody in the class.
Ooh, yes, we did.
So listen up close to the words I'm about to yell. If you already know them, all you gotta do is help. If your neighbor don't know them, you can show them like a show and tell. You say, follow me, baby, it's easier than ringing a bathtub. They're in the street. Lesbians, vegetarians, they don't eat meat. Black people got slightly lighter skin on the bottoms of their feet. And old white ladies always clap on the one and three. Everybody now, head home. They're in the street. Come on, y'all. Lesbian, vegetarians, they don't eat meat. Sing it out now. Black people got slightly lighter skin on the bottoms of their feet. And old white ladies always clap on the one and three.
And that's how it goes. We may never know. We may never, ever, 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 ever know for sure. But let me tell you, it's always true. You think that I would lie to you? And if this song helps you get along, I don't see why, I don't see how it could be wrong. And if this song reaches just one person, if this song reaches just one person, that won't be enough. You know that won't be enough. I'd like to have at least two.
I'd like to have at least two. I'd like to have at least two.
And that was Clap on the One and Three by Heatbox. He'll be performing at the West Theater in Duluth on May 9th. Are you ever inspired to do, I was about to say serious work, I'm not suggesting what you're doing is not serious, but, you know, something like just a straightforward love song or commentary on A Beautiful Day?
You know, no.
Okay, that's it. That's the answer to the question.
What gets me going is weird topics. I feel like there's literally a million love songs and literally a million songs about dancing and, you know, all that stuff. And I am interested in other people's art that's weird, or, you know, and I myself want to create things that are based on topics that I don't think a song has ever been written about. I think that's interesting. So that's where I go.
Well, let me dig down a little bit on that. There could be something, certainly something nobody's written about that's quite serious or moving.
Yeah, there is one serious song, I think, on the album. It's called I Bought a Bat, and it's about how I fear for not my safety in general, but just it's too bad that I feel like I need to buy a baseball bat from a local hardware store and just keep it near my bed just in case. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been very lucky and nothing has happened to me, but I did do that just to make sure. So, you know, that's a bummer. And I have a little kid, and I was looking at him one day and just thinking about how I had to buy a bat and how scary the world can be, especially if you're a parent. And so that's the one track, I think, where I open my heart just a little bit and then I close it right away again.
All right. Well, we will encourage people to hear that on the album. We're going to go out here to a tune called Zipper Merge. You want to tell us, I think it's going back to Minnesota behavior. Tell us what that's about.
As you accurately pointed out, the theme is very much just poking people in the ribs a little bit for various things that I noticed, especially around the Midwest. And one that I noticed is that people are terrible at zipper merging. And in fact, they will become enraged if you try to do it correctly, which is where if they're shutting down one of the lanes of a highway to do construction, everybody is supposed to drive their cars all the way down to the cones and then zip at the cone, you know, closure area. They'll put signs along the way saying use all lanes until merge point. They put all these signs and like, please do it. But people don't. They line up in one long line in the one lane. And they get so mad if you try to go down and do it correctly like the construction company wants you to. And it's, I think that's funny.
Right. That's a combination of the psychological behavior we've been talking about and physics. Because in physics, right, you know, two lanes of cars is going to handle more cars than one long lane, people. I get it. Yes.
It's safer. It causes less accidents. There's lots of good reasons to do it.
All right. Where can we find out more about your music?
Please go to my website, which is heatboxllc.com, where you can see all my tour schedules and buy a hoodie.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with rapper, beatboxer, musician Heatbox. He'll be performing at the West Theater in Duluth next Thursday, May 8th. Thank you for joining us, Heatbox.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Push your key into my ignition, babe. Let's go for a ride. It's a beautiful sunny day. Our adventures are underway. Just sit back and close your eyes. But you gotta wake up. We ain't the only on the way, and the way they drive, how are they still alive? It heats me up to say, now I know we gotta live and learn, but if you wanna take a quicker turn, you gotta know how to zipper merge. Why don't you know how to zipper merge? Now I know you think you're being polite.
Step by step, step by step.
Relax. Coming up, the regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Maria Lockwood of the Superior Telegram. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, if you drive past the new I-35-535 Can of Worms interchange a couple of times a week, as I do, it looks like it's almost done, with the emphasis on almost.
Well, they're getting there, but there is a new timeline that they have talked about. The recovery of human and presumably indigenous remains at the site of the major highway interchange project in February of last year has added an extra dimension to what was already a complex undertaking. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council has been working with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to chart a thoughtful and respectful course forward that doesn't stop work on portions of the project in less sensitive areas. MnDOT construction manager Pete Markler remains optimistic the total project will still be completed by the end of 2025, but that's almost a year later than initially anticipated. The total budget for the project was set at $435 million, but officials have acknowledged the final costs will come in much higher due to the unanticipated discoveries and related delays. MnDOT did advance work to identify potential hotspots where the odds of encountering human or other culturally significant remains appear to be a risk. Crews are placed on high alert to be mindful of anything unusually discovered in those areas and to stop work immediately if they should encounter any items of concern. This summer, motorists using I-35 can anticipate some lane closures to allow for painting and finishing work. It is expected that Lower Michigan Street will be reopened and the Cross City Multi-Use Recreational Trail will be restored. By fall, MnDOT aims to complete work on the U.S. Highway 53 Piedmont Avenue down to 21st Avenue West. Officials are also hoping to finish the Garfield Avenue I-535 interchange, including ramps that lead to and from the Blatnik Bridge. By 2025, MnDOT projects it will complete work on the remaining Highway 53 bridges, including ramps to and from I-35 and I-535. Finishing touches, including landscaping work, likely will stretch into 2026.
All right. Well, you recently reported on the Minnesota DNR using dynamite to remove seemingly abandoned deer stands. That explosive approach apparently has aftershocks.
Yes, the Minnesota DNR will now be cleaning up the mess that they created after they dynamited those deer stands. So Minnesota Department of Natural Resources crews will now clean up that debris after forestry staff workers blew up two wooden deer stands in the Bowstring State Forest near Deer River. The deer stands were destroyed with dynamite because they were permanent structures left illegally on public forest land. But both neighbors near the site and DNR officials now say the action was uncalled for and inappropriate. So once conditions dry out sufficiently to allow access, DNR staff will remove the debris, which will be recycled or otherwise disposed of properly. The mostly wooden structures were about 4 by 8 feet, around 10 feet tall, and placed on wheeled trailers. The stands had been there for at least a decade, neighbors said. State law, though, prohibits such large permanent structures from being left on state forest land. And large structures used for deer hunting have been a problem on other public lands in recent years, such as St. Louis County Forest. DNR officials said forestry staff left notices on the deer stands before the deer season, indicating they needed to be removed as part of a broader project to clean up deer stands and other personal property left on state forest lands against state regulations. If the owner does not take action, deer stands that violate state statute are typically removed by loading them on a trailer and hauling them out. DNR officials said that any actions taken against DNR employees in the incident will not be made public at this time, citing the Minnesota Data Practices Act. The action occurred in February in state land in Itasca and not far from houses. Neighbors who visited the site after the blast said debris is still scattered for 100 feet around the former deer stands.
And Duluth Mayor Roger Reinert has been on the job 100 days now. He's calling for a population boom for the city.
Yes, he is. In his first major speech as mayor, Roger Reinert said the city could no longer afford to limp along with a stagnant population and must do more to promote growth. He noted that in the past decade, Duluth has only added 400 some residents to the community, growing by 0.5% in 10 years, while regional centers around Minnesota grew at a rate of 10%. In his State of the City address, which Reinert delivered at Denfeld High School last week, he said the status quo is no longer acceptable. Although Duluth's population peaked at more than 106,000 residents in 1960, it slid below 90,000 with the recession of the early 1980s, and it's languished below that mark ever since. At last count in 2022, about 86,000 people called Duluth home. Reinhardt's not the first mayor in recent memory to set sights on bringing renewed growth to Duluth. Back in 2011, Mayor Don Ness proclaimed his ambition to push the population to 90,000 by 2020, calling for 90 by 20. That didn't happen, but Reinhardt announced his plans to take another run to achieve that goal a decade later, shooting for at least 90,000 residents by 2030. So what does Reinhardt plan to do to change that trajectory and bring more people to Duluth? In an effort to attract growth and workers, Reinhardt said he aims to make additional investments in economic development projects and also pledged to hold the line on property taxes next year. He said property taxes have become increasingly difficult for many of the city's most vulnerable homeowners who are living on fixed incomes. He explained that his administration intends to focus on must-dos instead of nice-to-dos.
All right. Well, Maria, the replacement of the Blatnik Bridge has drawn everyone to Superior, beginning with the President of the United States. Wisconsin's governor was in town this week to help fill a few potholes.
Yes, he was. Wisconsin's governor stopped in Superior on May 1st to fill a few potholes at the base of the Blatnik Bridge. The stop was part of Governor Tony Evers' annual statewide pothole patrol tour to help fix Wisconsin roads and highlight state investments to improve local roads and highways. The governor was joined by staff from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Superior Public Works crews, and local officials who pitched in to shovel hot mix asphalt into holes and tamp it down. Since taking office, Evers said the state has improved more than 7,400 miles of road and 1,780 bridges. Last year, more than 900 miles of road and 200 bridges were improved. At the end of the day, road investments are about economic development and making sure people can get to where they're going safely, Evers said. The budget signed by the governor last year includes $550 million to fund transportation projects underway or under development, in addition to $100 million for the local road improvement program and $150 million for the newly created agriculture road improvement program.
All right. And finally, we talked about new business startups earlier in the show. Superior has one new enterprise that just expanded from across that bridge.
Yes, they do. Duluth's Best Bread is opening a location in Superior. After a successful pop-up run in March, owners Robert and Michael Lilligard decided to make the site a permanent location at 1418 Tower Avenue. The Superior coming out in a huge way for the pop-up, Robert Lilligard said it made the decision to open a location in Superior really clear. But don't expect their name to change. Michael Lilligard said keeping the name actually makes things easier. It's a more defensible claim, he said. We don't have to prove we're the best bread in Superior, too, just in Duluth. Duluth's Best Bread will open May 28th and operate 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., Tuesdays through Sundays, at 1418 Tower Avenue. The family-owned French-German bakery opened its first store in 2015 in Lincoln Park and its second store in 2022 in downtown Duluth. Like the downtown Duluth store, the store in Superior will be a bakery cafe where people can sip an Italian-style espresso and eat a croissant or pick up fresh baguettes for the day, Lilligard said. The bakery will serve its entire product line of French and German baked goods.
All right. Well, there's certainly nothing wrong with calling it Duluth's Best Bread, but Superior has worked quite well for Superior Waffles. We've been joined by Maria Lockwood, reporter for the Superior Telegram. Thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at SuperiorTelegram.com, DuluthNewsTribune.com, and WPR.org. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Heatbox. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
Stupid fence, you don't make no sense. They should have built you any other way. Stupid fence, you don't make no sense. And I'm wondering, do you feel okay? It must be lonely. your baloney. You're not stopping a thing. But from what they've shown me, you're not the only one. No, you're the